Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So this morning we're going to do things a little bit differently. In order to put the two verses into context, we're going to start with a little preliminary information, and then we'll be reading verses from the 10th canto and the 1st canto in relation to our subject this morning. Okay. So the topic for this morning's class is Maya, Yoga Maya and Maha Maya, and the subject is rather subtle, so this preliminary information will be helpful to put in context what we're going to read. Can we get to the PowerPoint, please? Okay. All right. So we begin by talking about the meaning of Maya. Anyone know what does the word Maya mean? Vaishnavas. That which is not, right? That which is not. Illusion, something which creates in us a response that is, in fact, disconnected with our surroundings. Prabhupada gave the example of dreaming that there is a tiger in your room. So you may, while you're in bed, you may clench up and even scream, sweat. But when you wake up, you see, oh, there actually is no tiger. So he said this is a night dream, but we also have our daydream that I am this body, that I am from this family, that I am this sort of person. But that's also Maya. So the important thing to understand about this illusory energy is that it comes from God. It is not an independent creation. This divine energy of mind, Krishna says, is Daivi means divine. Daivi hesha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. It is coming from me, and it is part of me, my energies, but I'm not subjected to it also. So it is his associate and his assistant in his pastimes, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. So Maya has two services to Krishna. What are those two services? They're two manifestations. Uh-huh. That's a subset of Mahamaya. But in the broad picture, what are the two things that Krishna, that Maya does for Krishna? Yes, he covers, go ahead, Gopal. Oh. Okay. Okay. We'll try to speak louder. It depends on your perspective. Okay. So Maya has two functions. The broad Maya. Okay. So anyone know what I'm getting at here? Yes, Yoga Maya and Maha Maya. First, for the conditioned souls, she covers the conditioned souls who want to forget Krishna. This is Maha Maya. Okay. And she also covers the devotees, and this is Yoga Maya. So in the broad sense, these are the two functions of Maya. Now, it's the same energy, this illusory energy, just applied in two different ways. For example, we have on the wall here a thermostat. So in August, we turn it to the cool function. And in January, we turn it to the heat function. And both are being powered by electricity. So because the expert electrician has come in, he can use the same energy to heat or to cool. So in the same way, Krishna uses this illusory energy for these two different purposes, to cover the non-devotees and to cover the devotees. Okay? Mahamaya is covering the the non-devotee, and Yogamaya for the devotees. Any comments on this? This clear to everyone? Okay. So let's start with Mahamaya. How does Mahamaya act? By the way, does anyone know my dear god sister Mahamaya? Yeah, she was absolutely abhorred when Prabhupada gave her that name. She thought she was going to be teased relentlessly. But he said, like, he read her mind, and he said, this is one of Krishna's energy. So, Maya has a throwing potency, which Chaitanya Prabhu was alluding to. This throwing potency makes the living entity think that, he is Krishna. And then the covering potency. But let me get back to the throwing potency for a moment. This throwing potency, covers us when we decide that we want to be God instead of serving God. See? This is called the Shambhu, or the masculine, naturally, this is the masculine energy. when a person thinks, I'm gonna become God, I don't need to be subservient to anyone, I know better than everybody, it's so puffed up and so proud, right? I don't need to listen to anyone, I need no authority, I will perfectly scale the mountain of spirituality all by myself. This is called the Shambhu, Maya, male, illusory energy. So that throws the living entity from a very happy life in the spiritual world to Gainesville. And then the covering potency is what makes us believe this daydream. See, that we are in fact lording it over. We are the center of all we survey. We are enjoying in the material world. We are enjoying without God. So these two aspects of Mahamaya. In the covering potency, I'm just going to review these five deluding factors that are created by Lord Brahma. First is this self-deception, this ability to deceive oneself, to convince oneself that one is happy when in fact one is miserable, to convince oneself that one knows what he's doing when in fact he has no clue, like a man, you know, without a GPS. And the wife is always saying, just stop and ask for directions. No, no, I know where I'm going. And this self-deception allows us to smoke, allows us to eat more than we need, it allows us to be cruel to other people and think that we're perfectly justified in doing that. So many ways it makes us fools. First entity. The second element of this covering potency is this sense of death. Every living entity is laboring under the conception that I have this one life, and it's going to end, so I better act while I can. When I was growing up, there was a commercial on television for Clairol hair coloring, and the tagline was, if I only have one life to live, let me live it as a blonde. Even the cockroach, the low little creature, when we walk in the room and turn on the light, they scatter in all directions, right? Because, of course, not at Krishna House, but in other places where you live. Because they want to live, even though their existence is so miserable, they want to live. They don't want to die. The sense of death motivates the living entity to do many, many things, to work hard, to save money, to hoard food. This is the sense of death. The third covering agency is the anger after frustration. You know, when we get, when we have ambitions to enjoy and then we become defeated in those ambitions, we get angry. So this is described in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Dhyato vishayan pumsam. Dhyato means what? To contemplate. Vishaya pumsam. Vishaya is sense gratification. So when a person contemplates sense gratification, dhyato vishaya pumsam, sangha tesh upajayate. What is sangha, Gauranga Prasad? Association. right, so this association is a natural outcome of contemplating. If we contemplate some sense object, then we naturally want to be with it. Sangha teshu pajayate. Sangha sangjayate kama. Then from being in the association of this object of the senses, what develops? Lust. Kama. Kama. yes, kama means intense desire, lust. And kama krodha vijayate. So from lust comes krodha, anger, right? Anger is described as the little brother of lust. When we want something, we soon become angry because we don't get it, or we get it and it doesn't satisfy us like we thought it would. So this is krodha. And then anger, of course, leads krodha, bhavati, samoha, to illusion, samoha, smriti, vibrama. Then illusion makes us forget, smriti, bramsa, buddhi, nasho. And then our intelligence is lost, buddhi, nashat, pranashati. When our intelligence is lost, we totally fall down. So all of this begins by contemplating the object of the senses. Anger is one of the stops along the way. The sense of false ownership, thinking that it is mine. You know, Prabhupada said that a pauper is proud of his penny. So in the neophyte beginning stages of spiritual life, we may think that, oh, I don't want to have any sense that anything belongs to me, therefore let me give it all away. You know, I'll just renounce it all. So this is another kind of maya or illusion, because it wasn't ours in the first place, right? Prabhupada said if you walk into a bank and say, I renounce all the money in this bank, then people will think you're a fool or arrest you. it isn't your money to renounce. So if we look at this world and say, I renounce everything, but it wasn't yours in the first place. So Prabhupada explained that if a person finds a wallet and sees there's money in it and credit cards and everything, there are three ways to respond. One is to renounce it. I won't touch it. Another is to take it. Now this is mine. And the third is to take it and find the proper owner. This person, he says, is both intelligent and honest. So in the same way, the material energy is Krishna's. It is created by God. It was not created by us. But if we think it's ours, this is one of the covering elements of Maya. And finally, the bodily conception of life, thinking I am this body, that is the essential part of ignorance in the material world, thinking I am this body. So any comments on any of these? Yes, Prabhu. How does one get rid of self-deception and these covering elements? They cannot be independently shed. One has to rather pursue a positive course of action that cures the disease. Just like if one is sick, the symptoms appear. So if we try to just repress the symptoms with various over-the-counter medications, that may give us some temporary relief, but it doesn't cure the cause of the disease. So we have to get to the root cause. And the root cause is this throwing potency, this initial concept that I am meant to be the enjoyer of everything. You know, this is a really profound but very simple point, isn't it? The difference between spiritual life and material life is just wanting to be God or to serve God. It's that simple. And people aren't consciously walking around thinking, yes, I'm God. But when you work back a little bit, that is the worldview. That is the Weltanschauung. Everything centers around me, and I am here to exploit the situation as much as possible. So a devotee, just by changing that worldview, thinks, I'm here to use everything for Krishna's service. And whereas a person who's always trying to enjoy is always in anxiety, the person who's always trying to serve Krishna has nothing to worry about. See? So therefore, life is very happy for such a person. So that's how to get rid of those covering potencies. The covering potencies convince us and enable us to pursue this illusion on and on. You know, if it weren't for them, then we would stop banging our heads on the material energy and say, wait a minute. So in order to fulfill our desires to be God, we need all of these covering potencies. Okay? Other comments? Questions? Yes, Sean. Oh, is there a microphone? Oh. Yes, here's a learned comment from Bhakti Charuswami, whose appearance date is today. Very appropriate.
Bhakti Charuswami was giving a class in Italy, and he was talking about Maya, and he said that Maya is actually a devotee of Krishna. Sometimes we give her a really bad rap, you know. Yep. She's a devotee of Krishna who's working really hard for Krishna, and he said that sometimes when a devotee's struggling with Maya, instead of just like putting that negative energy towards it, just like praying to Maya Devi, please, I'm really trying to, become more sincere in my spiritual life. Mm. Please help me. And I thought that was really nice, because it makes her suddenly seem like, oh, she's a devotee that's approachable, actually, in that
nice
way, you know.
So yes.
Ask for her help.
Praying to Maya. Yeah, that's really a nice meditation. Because she is Krishna's servant. We're going to talk a little bit more about this right now, in fact. So does Mahamaya compete with Krishna? as Satan. So this is one concept of illusion, that there's this terrible death fight going on between God and illusion. And personified as Satan, right? So Satan and God are engaged in this battle, and you never know how it's going to come out, so you better throw yourself on God's side to help him out. You know, or God and Satan are battling for your soul, and you know it's really a toss up how it's going to come out. So these are examples of how Maya gets a bad rap. Right? By the way, I want to digress for a moment. You know this concept of Satan, it dates back to the 3rd century A.D. and in the Roman Empire at that time and before, there was a pagan religion which was centered on the worship of the bull. Bull. Yeah, it's a vestige of the Vedic culture. So the bull was considered a sacred animal, and this was the deity of these pagans. And that was the dominant religion of the day. And as Christianity began to grow, at first they were persecuted, and gradually the Christians were placed in responsible posts because of their superior character. And in time, Christianity kind of came on par with this pagan religion, and they coexisted. But then Constantine, the emperor, converted to Christianity, made it the state religion, and this pagan religion then was demonized. So the personification of evil was then cast as a kind of distorted bull with the hooves and the horns. That this is Satan, this is the devil. And ever since then, evil personified has been in this form of a quasi-bull. So, little history. Satan. The Bible portrays Satan as competing for Jesus' devotion. He tempts Jesus over and over. It's very hard to ascertain that from the Bible. That point is not made. In any case, as I recall, it's Lucifer. He's cast out of heaven by God, and then starts his own thing and starts competing. I think that's it in a nutshell, isn't it? Yeah. So this is quite a different conception. Yes, Prabhu. let's start with Vaishnava.
What was the Christian sect? People came. Which sect was it? There were two
Jehovah's Witnesses.
They were witnesses. They were coming to our home they have come for 3 times. So they gave us books once in a while. So we don't really offend them because they are following their things properly. So they come and talk. So I was just going through one of their books, and there was why there's so much misery in this world.
Mm.
So this question is being answered by Krishna. Let's see what these people say.
Hmm.
So it said that God has given Satan the charge of this world.
Ah.
And people have the free will to choose God over Satan.
Mm-hmm.
So that God can establish his supremacy. Like when you go across Satan and choose God, in a way your you're showing that God is supreme among every other being. So that is the reason why God created this whole world and granted Satan the management of the material world.
Interesting. Well, it's similar in a way, what we're saying, but there's probably more of a sense of competition. Gaur Lila, you have a comment there? Thank you. Really? He was a little proud, so he got a little proud. So and then had that desire to be number one.
Yeah.
I see. John?
One of the discussions we had when we were going to Janmashtami, one of the devotees and I, was I was asking him about the Vedic tradition. I was like, is there like sort of a Satan like that? Would it be Maya?
Huh.
And he, you know, said that, you know, there's no anti-God in the Vedic tradition. The fact that, you know, Maya is part and parcel of Krishna, that's kind of the same how Satan is. Satan works under God's discretion, so yes. Satan is part of God. Satan doesn't do anything without God, you know, giving him the direction, like in the book of Job, for example. So.
Very good example. Yeah, so there's, just like in the state, there's a corrections, Department of Corrections, which, by the way, is like the number one employer in North Central Florida. But the point is that the Department of Corrections is there only because there are criminals. And it's not something the state would like to do, but it must do because of the criminal mentality. So in the same way, Maya is there only because of the desires of the conditioned soul. Prabhupada said we had tiny Hiranyakashipus. Talk to Mike. How about in the mirror? So this is one of the ways in which Mahamaya gets a bad rap. So is Mahamaya acting independently of Krishna? This is the point. Is this Mahamaya an out of control energy like Lucifer? Now, you know, the genie's out of the bottle and God is all worried about it and talking to his psychiatrist and, you know, trying to get some help. Who can name a verse from Bhagavad Gita in which Krishna addresses this point? Very good, Arjuna. Yes. Maya dakshena prakriti suyate sa characharam hetuna nena konteya jagat viparivartate. Yes. This divine energy of mine is working under my direction. Yes. Yes. So it is not independent in any way. And the reason it's working is, as we said, because of the criminal desires that the living entities have. That's the only reason it's there. Here's another way people think that Maya competes with Krishna, that it covers Krishna. Maya is superior in strength, and Krishna is just a manifestation of this illusion. See, the personality of Godhead is just another function of Maya. So what is this philosophy called? Mayavadi. Yeah, exactly. This is, of course, the most egregious error philosophically and most offensive way of viewing God as just a manifestation of the material energy. So, go ahead, Prabhu. Yeah.
Direction of the king.
Mm. Jailer's working under the direction of the king.
Mm.
Mm. And if the king comes to visit the jail, he is not subject to the rules of the prisoners. Yeah, if the prisoner thinks, oh, this is another prisoner, then this is the biggest fool, right? Right. So, but he comes, the king would come and visit the jail out of kindness to encourage, to attract the criminals to a more sane and sensible way of life. So this is Krishna's kindness. Yada yada hi dharmasya. Whenever there's a decline in religion, I come. It is not that he's controlled by the material energy or by Mahamaya. Okay? Oh, now before we go on, I'd like to now take a moment and read this verse about Mahamaya. This is from the 10th canto. I'm putting Nimai Pandit through his paces this morning. Thank you. This is 10th canto, second chapter. Yes, there we go, verses 11 and 12. Now, a little background on this verse. when the earth was in duress, she personified went to the gods and said, please help me. I'm covered with all of these unnecessary armies. They in turn went to Lord Brahma, who said, we must go see Lord Vishnu. So then when they saw Lord Vishnu, he said, don't worry, Krishna is coming, and he will be accompanied by his brother, Balaram, as well as by this Mahamaya, or by his divine energy, Maya. So later, when Krishna was preparing for his pastimes, he instructed Maya to do a bunch of very complicated things. To be born in the womb of Yashoda, to be traded for the baby of Devaki, to then frighten Kamsa, and all of these, and to cover the guards, so Vasudeva, I mean, she was really busy. And she did a great job at everything. And so afterwards, this verse is spoken. Lord Krishna blessed Mayadeva by saying, in different places on the surface of the earth, people will give you different names, such as Durga, Bhadrakali, Vijaya, Vaishnavi, Kumuda, Chandika, Krishna, Madhavi, Kanyaka, Maya, Narayani, Ishani, Sharada, and Ambika. Where's Ambika? She's in Maya. So, who would like to read the purport? Please.
Because Krishna and his energy appeared simultaneously, people have generally formed two groups, the Shaktas and the Vaishnavas. And sometimes there is rivalry between them. Essentially, those who are interested in material enjoyment are Shaktas, and those who are interested in spiritual salvation and attaining the spiritual kingdom are Vaishnavas. Because people are generally interested in material enjoyment, they are interested in worshipping Mayadevi, the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vaishnavas, however, are Shuddha Shaktas, or pure Bhaktas, because the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra indicates worship of the Supreme Lord's energy, Hara. A Vaishnava prays to the energy of the Lord for the opportunity to serve the Lord along with his spiritual energy. Thus Vaishnavas all worship such deities as Radha Krishna, Sita Ram, Lakshmi Narayan, and Rukmini Dwarkadish, whereas Durga Shaktas worship the material energy under different names.
This is interesting, related to that point. So we usually think of Hara referring to Radharani, but here Prabhupada is saying in a very broad sense, it refers to the energy of Krishna. Okay, who would like to read next paragraph?
The names by which Mayadevi is known in different places have been listed by Vallabhacharya as follows. In Varanasi, she is known as Durga. In Avanti, she is known as Bhadrakali. In Orissa, she is known as Vijaya. In And in Kulahapura, she is known as Vaishnavi or Mahalakshmi.
Where is that, by the way, Kulahapur? Pardon me, Maharashtra? Maharashtra.
The representatives of Mahalakshmi and Ambika are present in Bombay.
Hmm.
In the country known as Kamarupa, she is known as Chandika. In northern India, Sharada. And in Cape Comorin, as Kanyaka. Thus, she is distributed according to various names in various places.
Okay, so this goes into a little more technical detail, but let's go ahead and read this last paragraph. Somebody who is comfortable with a lot of Sanskrit here.
Srila Vijayadvaja Tirthapad in his Padaratnavali Tika has explained the meanings of the different representations.
By the way, the word Tika, what does that mean? Commentary. This is his commentary. Go ahead.
Maya is known as Durga because she is approached with great difficulty. As Bhadra, because she is auspicious, and as Kali, because she is deep blue. Because she is the most powerful energy, she is known as Vijaya, because she is one of the different energies of Vishnu. She is known as Vaishnavi, and because she enjoys in this material world and gives facilities for material enjoyment, she is known as Kamuda. Because she is very severe to her enemies, the Asuras, she is known as Chandika, and because she gives all sorts of material facilities, she is called Krishna.
Krishna. Yeah.
In this way, the material energy is differently named and situated in different places on the surface of the globe.
Very good. Thank you. So this is the benediction that Krishna gave to Maya after she'd done such a great job for preparing all of his pastimes, giving her this benediction that she would be known and worshipped in so many different ways in so many different places. She's worshipped in Bengal. Those of you who've been to Mayapur, you see during the festival, I forget what time of year it is. I think it's a springtime festival, isn't it? The Kali Puja? Autumn is an autumn festival. So they just make thousands and thousands of these dolls of Kali, right? Everywhere you look. Durga. Pardon me? And during Karti, yeah. So, Durga, Kali. So this is very popular because generally she's worshipped for material gain. So this is a chance to just really cash in, and everybody joins in the fun, and it's a very exciting festival of material enjoyment, basically, right? What else can you say about it, Kalyan? Thank you.
Children, Lakshmi, Saraswati, Ganesh, and Kartik. But Mother Kali is worshipped only by herself.
I see.
And with Lord Shiva on her feet, because she was dancing after killing the Asuras. So she stumbled her husband. And then when she realized that, she was like, her tongue got out of her mouth, and she was like expressing that, something.
Expressing what?
Expressing her
shock.
Yeah,
that she's dancing on her husband.
Yeah, husband, yeah. During Kali Puja, actually, all kind of mood of ignorance are practiced.
Uh-huh.
All kind of intoxication,
sacrificing animals. Everything. Yeah.
And during Durga Puja also, there is a 5-day long puja.
Mm.
So there is a day called, which is in between Ashtami and Navami, in the middle part of the Durga Puja. And a puja is offered on that particular period, which is called Sandhi Puja, when Mother Durga killed Shumbha and Nishumbha. To remember that incident, so they sacrifice
that. Oh, wow.
Animals, yeah.
In the fifth canto, we were talking about the three lives of Judd Bharat. And in his third life, he was taken before the deity of Kali to be sacrificed because these foolish Kali worshippers wanted a human sacrifice to propitiate her. And he was a rather foolish person, so they thought, we'll just offer him. But, in fact, Kali was very displeased by this, and she took the lives of all of her worshippers. So the point is, material energy personified is an object of great worship to those who are materialistic. And in one form or another, one way or another, Kali is worshipped all over the world for this reason. Okay? Thank you. That was very interesting. So now, how does Yogamaya serve Krishna? We talked about how Mahamaya serves Krishna. Now, how does Yogamaya serve Krishna? First of all, if you were God, would you want constant adoration? Would that get a little monotonous after a while? Like, even celebrities in this world experience this. You know, they get tired of the paparazzi, big annoyance, people fawning all over them. George Harrison spoke about this, how after he became famous and wealthy, he just had a very hard time having friends because he felt everybody was asking him for his money. And as a very sensitive person that he just began feeling very miserable like this. There was a story of the printing of Krishna book. You know the story? If you don't, I'll tell it briefly. He was, Shyamasundar, this very nice devotee, made friends with George, and they just hit it off, and they were friends. And Shyamasundar never asked George for anything. And George appreciated him very much for his spirituality. So Prabhupada asked he needed money to print the Krishna book. He'd been working on it for years, so it was all ready to print. He said, you asked George for 19,000 pounds to print the Krishna book. So he gave him this order, and Shyamasundar was really distraught about it. He didn't know how to do it. So George had invited him and some other guests for dinner. So they had dinner, and they had dessert, and the whole time Shyamasundar's in anxiety. How am I going to ask him? How am I going to ask him? And finally, dessert's over, and people are talking, and he's thinking, this is the order of my spiritual master. I must do it. So he just blurted out, George, Prabhupada asked me to ask you for 19,000 pounds to print the Krishna book. And then there was stony cold silence. Just like somebody had made a huge offense. And nobody said anything. And all of a sudden there was a huge blast of lightning. And all the lights in the house went out. Still silence. And then the lights came back on. And George said, well, I guess I'd better do it then. The point is that God has his varieties of relationships. He's not a one-track person. Stop groveling, in the words of Monty Python. Stop groveling, God says. He gets tired of people just approaching him in this attitude of awe and veneration. Not that he gets tired of it. He accepts everybody's devotion. But he's not limited to that. That's the point. And who else but devotees of Krishna can understand this point? He doesn't just want us to fear him and to be in awe of him and to pray to him for our necessities. You know, like a cruel parent lording it over the children. Now ask me for this. Now ask me for this. That's not his demeanor at all. So, since he doesn't want this monosyllabic relationship, monotonous relationship, how is it possible for devotees to give God the variety of relationships that he craves? See? Because he is so much greater, and he is so superior. And we are dependent on him for everything. Nityo nityanam, chaitanas chaitananam, eko bahunam, yovididhati kamanam. Among many nityas or eternals, there is one chief eternal. And among many conscious entities, chaitananam, there is one chief conscious entity. Eko bahunam. So the business of the one is to give all of the necessities to everyone else. That is our relationship. So how can somebody who is cognizant of this fact give him the variety of relationships that he wants? It's logically impossible. Therefore, we need Yoga Maya. You see? This is the way in which the Lord covers the devotees so they can act in various relationships with Him. That is the other verse we're reading this morning, which is 139. So this verse takes place at the end of this chapter from the first canto called Lord Krishna's entrance into Dwarka. He is finally able to leave the Pandavas and Kunti and Bhishma, all of whom wanted him to stay and kept him there for a long time before the battle, during the battle, after the battle. And then they still didn't want him to go. They said, please come and help establish Yudhisthira and Hastinapur. So he's done all of these things. Finally, he goes back to Dwarka, where he's been absent a long time. And everybody greets him according to their natures, their relationships, full varieties. All the big pundits come out. All the prostitutes come out. All the children come out. All the old people come out. And the Lord, he's offering obeisances to his superiors. He's shaking hands with his peers. He is offering blessings to his juniors, giving all of these reciprocations according to the external status of the devotee. Finally, after greeting everyone formally, he goes to his palace, and there are his wives. And the wives, of course, are most intimate with him. So the simple and delicate women truly thought that Lord Sri Krishna, their beloved husband, followed them and was dominated by them. They were unaware of the extent of the glories of their husband, as the atheists are unaware of him as the supreme controller. So see, Mahamaya works on the atheists to make them ignorant of Krishna's supremacy. And Yogamaya is working on his wives to make them ignorant of his supremacy. Yes, that's right. They don't know. Who is God? This is the same energy working as heat or coal, okay? According to the expert, to the need of the expert. Who'd like to read the purport?
Even the transcendental wives of Lord Sri Krishna did not know completely the unfathomable glory of the Lord. Ignorance is not mundane because there is some action of the eternal potency of the Lord, an exchange of feelings between Him and His eternal associates. The Lord exchanges transcendental relations in five ways, as proprietor, master, friend, son, and lover. And in each of these pastimes, He plays fully by the potency of Yoga Maya, the eternal potency. He plays exactly like an equal friend with the coward boys or even with friends like Arjuna. He plays exactly like a son in the presence of Yashoda Maya. He plays exactly like a lover in the presence of the coward damsels. He plays exactly like a husband in the presence of the queens of Dwarka. Such devotees of the Lord never think of the Lord as the supreme, but think of Him exactly as a common friend, a pet son or a lover, or husband very much dear to heart and soul. That is the relation between the Lord and His transcendental devotees, who act as His associates in the spiritual sky, where there are innumerable Vaikuntha planets. When the Lord descends, He does so along with His entourage to display a complete picture of the transcendental world, where pure love and devotion for the Lord prevail without any mundane tinge of lording it over the creation
of the Lord.
Of the Lord. Such devotees of the Lord are all liberated souls, perfect representations of the marginal or eternal potency and complete negation of the influence of the external potency. The wives of the Lord Krishna were made to forget the immeasurable glories of the Lord by the eternal potency so that there might not be any flaw of exchange. And they took it for granted that the Lord was a hen-picked husband, always following them in lonely places. In other words, even in personal associates of the Lord do not know Him perfectly well. So what do the thesis writers or mental speculators know about the transcendental glories of the Lord?
The mental speculators present different theses as to His becoming the causes of the creation. the ingredients of the creation are the material and efficient cause of the creation, etc. But all this is but partial knowledge about the Lord.
What does that phrase material and efficient mean? Can anyone explain that? So he creates the material, the raw elements, and then the use of those elements, the efficient cause. He not only creates the raw ingredients, but he controls how they're used.
Factually, they are as ignorant as the common man. The Lord can be known by the mercy of the Lord only, and by no other means. But since the dealings of the Lord with his wives are based on pure transcendental love and devotion, the wives are all on the transcendental plane without material contamination.
Let's just back up that sentence. The Lord can be known by the mercy of the Lord only and by no other means. So we can't force God to reveal himself, right? As Srila Bhakti Siddhanta said, don't try to see God. Try to act in such a way that God will see you. Okay?
Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purpose of the first canto, 11th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Lord Krishna's Entrance into Dwarka.
This is so nice. You know, this is, the very end of this chapter. The last persons he greet are his wives. So, Krishna is full of relationships by the mercy of Yogamaya, you see. There, he has friends, he has lovers, he has servants, he has peers, all varieties. And that gives him joy and pleasure. This is his enjoyment. He doesn't want to just have this single relationship of awe and reverence. So if we are in the mood of pleasing Krishna, please hold that question just a moment. If we're in the mood of pleasing Krishna, then we will also want to have relationship with Krishna. In the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the 10th verse, there's this beautiful statement the Lord makes. Vita raga bhaya krodha manmaya mamupashita. Being completely free of attachment, fear, and anger. Many great sages in the past have developed a transcendental loving relationship with me. So in the purport, Prabhupada explains that vita raga bhaya. The vita is attachment, fear, and anger. Attachment is, of course, just materialism. Anger is this obviously frustration with materialism. But this fear, very interesting, he says, a fear of a personal spiritual relationship. So this is why people prefer impersonalism to Krishna consciousness. The default for the average person is, who's interested in spiritual life, is impersonalism. That is, I just want to withdraw violently, if need be, extremely from materialism. I don't care if people like it or don't. I don't care what anyone else thinks. Relationships are no longer important to me. They're just part of Maya. I know I went through this in my life when I was a young seeker in my late teens. And I just walked out of my parents' house, you know. They thought I was going crazy. Because I was just meditating, I didn't want to talk to them. And they called a psychiatrist. And when the psychiatrist came to the house and I realized what they were thinking, I was just so insulted that I took my backpack and walked out. So, thank God, I met the devotees soon after that. But this is a fear of relationships. I didn't want to be a materialist, and I thought all relationships means that it's just illusion. So being freed of that fear of having relationship is a critical step forward in one's spiritual life. If one thinks I cannot relate to the devotees, then one's spiritual advancement will stop pretty much at that point, because that's where our relationship with Krishna begins. If we can't have relationships with the devotees, then how can we have a relationship with the object of our devotion? You see? So tam prasangam mama viryasam vido bhavanti hritkarna rasayana kata. In the third canto, Lord Kapila says, and this will be one of our verses of the week coming up, that by the association of the sat, of saintly people, we get to hear Rasayanam Katha, the topics of the Supreme Lord. And that, Bhavanti Hrit Karna Rasayana Katha, that opens up the door to spiritual advancement, to liberation, to mukti, to bhakti. You know, that becomes the key that unlocks the whole thing. Then, what is it? Shraddha, faith. Shraddha comes after we get that taste. Shraddha, ratir, bhakti. Faith, taste, and devotion. Right? Follow the association of devotees. So that's what distinguishes the devotee from the person who's simply afraid of Satan, you know, and also afraid of God, but from the impersonalist who thinks that nature is superior to its creator, and from the atheist who just wants to eliminate God altogether. This relationship with Krishna is the most sweet thing that we will ever experience in our existence. It is full of joy, and it just gets better and better as time goes on. Unlike material relationships, which are always fraying, wearing out, and ultimately ending. Arjuna, what is your comment, Prabhu?
The question is that it feels that in Vaikuntha, the most relationships are of just worshipping. They know Krishna is God there, and so it's very few, like maybe Lord Ram and Dwarka and Golok Vrindavan, that relationship is more variety.
Right. So yes, there's less variety of relationships in the Vaikuntha planets. Right, the Nectar Devotion talks about these five kinds of liberation, right, such as living on the same planet as the Lord, having the same bodily features as the Lord, but the one that the devotee will never accept is entering the existence of the Lord. So, these are all types of relationships in neutrality. Neutrality. Yeah, so you're saying that there are more planets like that. Goloka Vrindavan is exclusive in that it has all five of the varieties of relationships. Well, that's true, but Goloka Vrindavan is unlimited also. So it's not like there's a big crowd and there's no more room for anyone else to get in. Speaking of, just you mentioned the Jehovah's Witnesses, our friends. They're very nice people, but this is one of the tenets of their faith, that they have 144,000, that's it. That is a population in heaven. Did you read about that? Yeah, so. Yeah, apparently there's a lot of competition to get in. Like, it's like UF for freshmen, you know. It's just, I don't know how they reconcile that. And why do they, you know, want to do missionary work? There is no limit. Krishna can accept everybody in all varieties of relationships. Okay?
In one of the classes in the past, it was mentioned that one need not be an extrovert to be a devotee. So how does one, like, relating to the devotees, like, how is it different from being an extrovert?
Yes, that's a very good question. Satsrup Maharaj said to Srila Prabhupada, what kind of person does Krishna want us to be? And Prabhupada responded, you are very sincere. And that's all he said. So the import of that statement is that how could we be somebody other than who we are, even if we wanted to be? We're so sincere, we'll do anything to please Krishna. We'll become somebody other than who we are. So it's not only unnecessary, it's impossible. So we all have our individual and unique relationship with Krishna, and that relationship is eternal. So we can't artificially, or we don't have to artificially, try to be someone other than who we are. The thing is that self-realization means we discover who we are, and it's not always a pretty sight. It's not always exactly what we thought we were going to be. We start seeing the anarthas, the unwanted things, And like the acharyas, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur and others, write about this, discovering all of their horrible qualities. And they write whole songs just about their bad qualities. Right? Concluding with, "So Krishna, this is my condition, please accept me." This is actually a highly realized stage when we see our faults very clearly to the point where it affects us emotionally. See? We actually become struck. Oh, what, I have been so fallen. So just to say I am fallen is not the same thing. Like a devotee said to Srila Prabhupada, "I am the most fallen." To which Prabhupada replied, "You are not the most anything. Simply insignificant."
Hare Krishna Prabhu. I was just thinking that there are two divisions of Maya, Yoga Maya and Maha Maya, but for most of us, we are generally, those of us who are aspiring, the sadhakas, we are generally oscillating between the two. Mm. And how, and I also know that, it's said that Maya, sometimes we hear this saying that Maya is not interested in those who are already under her control, but she's more interested in getting back those people who are trying to go away from her control. So, for myself, I think also most of us can also relate to the fact that in the course of a devotional journey, many times Maya will test us, and actually many times we will even fall. And because of that, we have to, but what really happens in the course of a devotional journey is that when all these tests by Maya comes, even if we fall, the most important thing is to pray to Krishna or the Vaishnavas who are themselves free from the Maya to bring us back to the devotional service, and those fall downs will then serve as an important lesson and will actually make us stronger in our spiritual life.
So you're saying that we vacillate between Yoga Maya and Maha Maya?
Yeah, because we cannot have Krishna and Maya at the same time. So whenever we want to enjoy ourselves, then we have to take shelter of Maha Maya, because the nature of the soul is that we have to take shelter of something. So and what happens when we take shelter of Maya, Maha Maya, then we'll get kicked by her. We'll learn a lesson, and then because we know the knowledge of Krishna consciousness, then again we take shelter of Krishna. Then sometimes again we take shelter of Maya, and again we take shelter of Krishna. It's some kind of like a journey.
You know, I have a different impression. I understand what you're saying, but it's like in the Nectar Devotion, it says that if a person one time says, "Krishna, take me, I'm yours," Krishna never forgets that person. That relationship is permanently changed. Even if the person who makes that statement later has second thoughts about it. We may fluctuate, but Krishna doesn't fluctuate. So the life of a devotee is already entirely different from the life of the non-devotee, you see. It is just a matter of time. So it's not the same. It's not quite the same. You see, like we're fluctuating between Krishna and Maya. We might want to go to Starbucks. You know, we experience that at Krishna House sometimes. You say, "Okay, I just got to go get the Starbucks." So is that an example of what you're saying? Well, you know, candidly, it's just not that important. It's just not that important. Yeah, that's a symptom of not having a lot of attraction or a lot of attachment to devotional activities. But it's not the essence. It's not that, okay, now I'm in Maya again, and now I'm in Krishna consciousness again, and now I'm in Maya again. No. If a person has made a commitment, "I want to be a devotee," then that is a permanent switch. And even if that person may apparently engage in mundane activities from time to time, it's not the same. You know, Prabhupada gave the bottom line to four regulative principles. There was an instance when Prabhupada said amongst his disciples, and this was some years when he had, you know, many hundreds or thousands of disciples, he said, "So maybe some of our men have," how do you say, "blooped?" That word "bloop" is the sound that the soul makes when boop, when it falls into the material ocean. Boop. So that became an ISKCON verb. So he said, "So some of our men have blooped. So maybe 5 or 10 of our men have blooped." And so the devotees were looking at each other. Maybe Prabhupada doesn't know. It was more than that. Then he said, maybe maybe 4 or 5 of our men have gone back to this meat eating. So that was for him, that was the bottom line. At that point, there's actually an exit from Krishna consciousness. When a person deliberately doesn't want to be a devotee any longer, then one will eat meat. See, so our purpose may not be so strong. And that takes time. It just takes time. It takes experience. When we flirt with the material energy after flirting with Krishna consciousness, and we discover that you get a lot more enjoyment in Krishna consciousness, nobody has to convince us philosophically. We know. We're just seeking pleasure, and we're getting more pleasure here. I know we get more pleasure from prasadam, but it's a little delayed. Is that right? Adiwo! Okay. Sorry for the delay. Gauranga Prasad, last point.
Say a devotee leaves a kitchen full of dirty dishes or spills some sabji and neglects to wipe it up. Would you say that's Mahamaya or Yogamaya?
In other words, if a devotee does something reprehensible or inappropriate, is that because of the influence of material energy or the spiritual energy? As Prabhupada said, it is due to bad habits. So indirectly, it is the influence of the material energy. But again, for a devotee, it's a different thing. It is just a matter of time. So this is why Krishna specifically says in Bhagavad Gita that we should be very careful about finding faults in such a person. Apichet sudaracharo. Even if a person does the most abominable action, apichet sudaracharo budjate mama nanyabak. Sador eva samantavya. You should still consider that person a sadhu because they'll get on the right path. So if we see somebody has left a stack of dirty dishes, it is incumbent on us to know how do we respond to that situation.